Coming to you from the Armed American Radio Studios on Peachtree Street in downtown Atlanta, this is Armed American Radio. Here is Mark Walters.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is a big hour. Every week, regular Armed American Radio contributor David Kodria is here, and you hear him in ways that only David can do it. He's brilliant. I don't know of any other way to describe David and the work that he has done here on this program, and he couldn't do it without Mike Vanderbo. The two of them work together. Mike has been on the program before, and I want to set this segment up with a clip from Michelle Malkin. Let's go ahead and run that, Sean, and then we'll introduce both David and Mike.
I salute Cheryl Atkinson at CBS News, who just won an Edward R. Murrow Award for her reporting on Fast and Furious. But it was just a blogger and just a blogger and just a blogger before she came along who initially exposed the bloodiest scandal in Obama administration history. It was people like David Kodria and Mike Vanderbo and Mary Chastain and Katie Pavlik and Matthew Boyle.
Oh, you can go ahead. There we go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
With the exception of Matthew, all of them have been on the show. Katie Pavlik, of course, has been here on a number of occasions. We're looking forward to having her back on with her book, Fast and Furious. Let's go directly to David Kodria first. David, welcome to the show, as usual, every week. How you doing?
Happy Father's Day, Mark, Mike, and Sean.
Happy Father's Day to you.
To you, too. To you, too. Let's. Absolutely. How about we bring in Mike Vanderbo, too? Mike, always a pleasure to have you here. Welcome to the program.
Well, glad to be back.
Glad to be back. Glad to have you back. Let me tell you, how are you feeling? I know you've had some health issues. How are you feeling? Good today?
Well, I'm going in tomorrow to have a hole in my esophagus plugged up. So.
And here you are, literally doing God's work. I can't thank you enough.
Well, I just do what I do. Some people read it.
I think I've said before that Mike, at times, has done more from his hospital bed than the entire mainstream media combined when it comes to exposing Fast and Furious. And just to set things up a little bit, he's got two things that he broke earlier this week and something else that he's going to talk about tonight that I don't think anyone else has heard about aside from a close inner circle, and I'm champing at the bit to hear Mike speak, so let me get out of the way.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, David, I appreciate you setting that up. What I'm going to do is step back and let you two go. Let's do it this way. You're no radio rookie with the fact that, David, we sent a press release out to a number of different, affiliates. This went out to thousands, quite frankly, including Senate and House staffers. It went to major news outlets. So this is big stuff, and the story continues to give, as you say, David. So go ahead and start with Mike, and I'll back out.
Okay, well, basically the two stories that Mike talked about this week, one is that DOJ whistleblowers, having information of DOJ whistleblowers coming forward, and the second being that the ICE agent Jaime Zapata, who was murdered down in Mexico, that for one way or another, this has evaded any kind of public disclosure until now, that his name appeared on the bottom of a report of investigation that included some Fast and Furious weapons, establishing a connection that had hitherto been denied by Janet Napolitano. And before I turn it over to Mike, I would like to say one thing. People have been extrapolating and inferring conclusions based on the Zapata story, and what I've been trying to say is, look, Mike is reporting what credible sources, people who have proven themselves in the past, have relayed to him, and he's gotten corroboration, okay, and so this is credible stuff that he's bringing forward. In terms of connecting the dots further than that, Mike has not done that, and I've seen some criticism on the Sipsey Street Irregulars blog because of that. Mike, are you saying this? If so, why don't you come out and say it? And no, he's not saying this. What Mike is reporting faithfully is what his sources have told him. And in terms of anybody else then connecting dots further than that, Mike is not saying that, and my only rejoinder to that is use caution when connecting dots that have not been firmly established, and this whole thing would be resolved if the administration would simply be forthcoming with the information that ISA and committee have been trying to get for God knows how long now. So with that, I'll step out of the way. Mike, why don't you tell us what you found out?
You want me to start with the...
However you think the story needs to be told, my friend.
Well, you know, well, the first story I broke last week was of significant import was the fact that two whistleblowers from high up in the Justice Department have essentially come in from the cold to the ISA committee and provided them with more documents. Although I know that there were other quote-unquote mainstream reporters that were working on this story, none of them got the corroboration that I did. However, I got the best kind of corroboration I could have gotten after the story because it was discovered that people at the committee of both parties were mad at me for disclosing that. And you don't generally get mad about a story that's incorrect.
Right.
So I figured I was dead on, and that apparently set a lot of bees buzzing in Justice. The better of the two stories, I think I broke the day after that, which was that congressional investigators had actually gone to DHS to view DHS's collection of Fast and Furious documents, and that these congressional investigators included representatives from the Senate, the House side, and including the Democrats, that while there, they discovered a report of investigation dated August 2010 of an interdiction of weapons from Arizona to San Antonio. This ROI was filed out of the Laredo office, and it indicated that of the 80 weapons that had been interdicted, 50 were Fast and Furious weapons, most of them coming from Andre Howard's Lone Wolf Trading Company and purchased by the straw buyers that the ATF agents were not allowed to follow to the next stage.
Mike, hold on to that thought. I want to remind listeners that you and David are going to be here for the hour. When we come back, we're going to pick up right from where you just left off here on the Armed American Radio Network. David Kodria, welcome back.
Mark, before we get back into Mike picking up the narrative again, I'd like to take just a little sidebar, if I could.
Please.
I have some sad news to share with Armed American Radio listeners. Earlier this week, Kirby Ferris, who was the research director for Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, passed away after a long illness. I'd never met Kirby, but I did have the pleasure and good fortune to correspond with him on a semi-regular basis, and all I can say is that, you know, it's times like this that we realize that occasionally we share the path with some really good people, and they're with us for a while, and then they're not with us any longer. And so prayers go out to Kirby's family and survivors. Very sad news.
Yeah, well said, and our hearts go out to everybody over there at JPFO or JFPO. You know, they're going to be listening on the podcast over there on the website. If you're listening to us over there on the Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership site, thank you very much, and keep up the fight. We've got your back. Mike Vanderbo, welcome back. Go ahead and pick up the narrative, my friend. The floor is yours.
Well, so the congressional staffers were going through this report of investigation and saw that it referred to Fast and Furious weapons. It wasn't until they got to the bottom of the page that they realized that this thing had been prepared by Jaime Zapata, who worked out of the Laredo office. But, of course, Zapata was the ICE agent who was later murdered in Mexico with weapons, walked weapons, that were found from Texas beside his body. The ICE and DHS and Justice had always denied that the Zapata case had anything to do with Fast and Furious. And yet now we know that Zapata actually was quite familiar with Fast and Furious. And, you know, it's caused a lot of speculation about, you know, what's going on here. I do know that the very fact that I found out about this memorandum, and remember, it was only viewed in camera. The congressional investigators did not get to take this with them. Lieutenant Napolitano, I understand, is quite disconcerted to know how it was that I found out about this document that has never left the walls of DHS. As a matter of fact, I was told yesterday morning that she hates me personally.
Congratulations.
And again, I'm jealous.
Congratulations. A pat on the back to you, my friend.
Well, some of the fallout from this, I haven't really printed yet, but the Democrats on the committee are beating up the Republicans on the committee, again, making them angry at me as much as they are pleased at me for helping push the story along, I rather suspect. But the GOP's mad at me because the Democrats are beating up on them, claiming that they're leaking this stuff to me, when in fact, I'm not getting this from anybody on the committee. Right, and it continues to make both sides crazy. But the story I'm going to be breaking after midnight tonight is going to make them crazier.
Man, oh man, I don't even know where to start, David. Every week we go through this,
and
with what we've seen this past week, let me start here. With what we saw this past week, news again yesterday, the day before yesterday, and the day before that about Holder now reluctantly wanting to compromise and work with, and ISA now saying he may hold off a contempt. What does all this have? Just tie this together for us.
It's tough to tie together without knowing, you know, what ISA knows and where he's coming from. To, again, Mark, I'm very cautious on this program in my speculations. I go with what I know and with what sources tell us, which is pretty much the same as what Mike does. Mike kind of indicated there are people that are trying to connect dots at this point. All we're bringing in is pieces of the puzzle, little picture pieces, little pixels, if you will, and in terms of how they're ultimately going to be connected when the entire picture is laid out is something that I can't really say at this point with any kind of authority. I can speculate. I'd prefer not to.
Mike, let me ask you this. What impact is this going to have on the election in November?
That's an unknowable.
Let me rephrase that. Will this have an impact?
I think it will. It depends a lot. I have sources that say both ways, that the GOP leadership has sold us, that the fix is in, yada, yada. I have other people who I marginally believe more than the first set, who say that ISA knows what he's doing and this is all part of a clever plan, right, including the timing, which is frustrating all of us,
right,
that here we are, what, 17, 18 months after the murder of Brian Terry, after David and I broke this story in the beginning, after we got the senators in touch with the whistleblowers, and after we got, you know, folks like Cheryl Atkinson in touch with the whistleblowers. You know, here we are still arguing about, you know, the holding action represented by Eric Holder. And, you know, we've been very frustrated that the committee seems unwilling or unable to take on some agencies that are actually more culpable than the ATF, such as the FBI and DHS, ICE. All right. There's even links to the State Department. So it's all been extremely frustrating, and it's been very hard to put up with. But you know, I'm with David. I don't think we need to speculate. I think we need to pay attention. I think the next 5 months are going to be some of the most significant in American history that we've ever seen.
It's fascinating to me that you're now seeing ISA, who very boldly went where no one else went before, going after Holder with the contempt, is now deciding, okay, well, wait a minute, I might back up a little bit here if I get this. And it does seem like a fix is in. David, we've discussed it here before.
Yeah, I don't know. Has Holder been spooked to where he's going to release some stuff? I doubt it. I think that he's playing a Stonewall game. I think that we've seen the contempt which he returns to the committee. But again, Mark, this is why programs like Armed American Radio are so invaluable, because this is where the news is getting out. Michelle Malkin in her great introduction. I just love her. She is just great. And,
yeah, tell her to pronounce your name properly, Michelle, if you're listening.
But the just a blogger versus real journalist, that's the problem that Mike and I have frustration with.
More when we come back here on the Armed American Radio Network. We'll see if we can't tweak Mike to give us a little bit more information that's going to break after midnight right after this. David, we're going to start getting hot into the conversation now, as you and I do every week, because we have Mike here and I want to pick his brain as well. We'll start with you, David. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mark. I think that you led off perfectly at the end of the last segment where you said that we're going to now press Mr. Vanderbilt and ask about what is it that we're going to see at midnight.
Well, you're going to see a very long story that's full of detail. If you don't mind, I'll scoop myself and read you the first few paragraphs and then the concluding paragraph. I think you'll find it interesting. As early as October 2009, officials in both the Central Intelligence Agency and the Drug Enforcement Administration objected through their respective chains of command about weapons smuggling and related confidential informant operations in the Republic of Mexico on the part of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives and the Federal Bureau of Investigation, including what the world has come to know as Operation Fast and Furious, according to previously reliable sources familiar with the intelligence operations of the United States. Because of the refusal of the ATF and FBI at lower levels to allow deconfliction with the CIA and DEA, these complaints, according to the sources, were eventually forwarded to the National Security Council of the White House, including Kevin O'Reilly, a State Department employee seconded to the NSC, O'Reilly's boss, Dan Restrepo, then Director of Western Hemisphere Affairs at the NSC, and Dennis McDonough, then NSC's Head of Strategic Communication and since promoted to the Deputy Director of the National Security Council. McDonough, described in one biographical sketch as a tough guy and Obama's single most influential foreign policy advisor, is also a personal friend and basketball buddy of the President of the United States. The result, said one source, the word came back from NSC, butt out. McDonough's is a name not previously mentioned in regard to the Fast and Furious investigation, although it has been established that by March 2009, Phoenix ATF Special Agent in Charge William Newell was exchanging emails with O'Reilly, and that Dan Restrepo was in turn being briefed on those communications by O'Reilly. Yet other sources have recently reported to this writer that O'Reilly, who was suddenly transferred to a State Department job in Iraq when the White House discovered that the ISA committee wanted to talk to him about his contacts with Newell, owes his continued Fast and Furious anonymity to McDonough. Said the source, NSC Deputy Director Dennis McDonough is the guy protecting Kevin Riley, adding, DEA knows what O'Reilly did. According to the latest reports from my sources, O'Reilly remains essentially out of reach of ISIS investigators in Iraq. One source joked that this was an example of strategic non-communication. And then I have a tremendous amount of material on McDonough that shows exactly how important he is. My final paragraph is this. These latest reports linking McDonough with Kevin O'Reilly and the deconfliction decision subsequent to the complaints by the DEA and CIA about gunwalking into Mexico place responsibility for the Fast and Furious scandal directly where many observers had suspected all along, at the threshold of the door to the Oval Office.
Explosive, to say the least. You've just put this at the White House. David, we're sure... You heard this right here on Armed American Radio first. I guarantee you that this will be headlines, as we have seen before. David, please, the floor is yours.
This just continues, Mark, the gift that keeps on giving. And when I hear this, Mike, wasn't there a White House or a DOJ attorney, some attorney who wrote back to ISA and said they were not going to make O'Reilly available for testimony? Do you recall that?
Oh, they refused.
Yeah. Where is O'Reilly now?
O'Reilly's in Iraq, working for the State Department.
He's in Iraq, okay.
And the other thing that this comes on to is that Now, there's another story that's in the news. It's not something that Mike and I have written on. We've paid attention to what others have written on, and that's the leaks, okay, and some of the leaks that are causing real problems, such as this Pakistani pharmacist who was tied into giving tips on bin Laden, who was jailed, and then the Saudi double agent who told about a bomb plot in the U.S. who now has to be on the run because of leaks coming. And an interesting thing happened a couple days ago on Sean Hannity's show. He was talking to Pat Caddell, who's a former Democratic pollster, who basically pointed a finger at the national security advisor to Obama, the chief advisor, a guy with the office in the West Wing, a guy by the name of Tom Donilon, who sits on the National Security Council along with everybody that Mike just talked about. Now, the reason that I think that this is important to bring up is because now all of a sudden, if you have speculation that Obama is directing these leaks that's coming out on a national network, okay, now to say all of a sudden that things coming in from the other side, Obama and Holder, they just have no clue. They just have no clue. Nobody knows anything about it. The Sergeant Schultz, I know nothing defense that Holder has used, that Napolitano has used, and it just opens the door to all kinds of things. It's jaw-dropping, Mark.
Yeah, it is jaw-dropping, and it would be pure speculation on my part right now to try to tie this together live on the air. However, I have my thoughts.
Yeah.
I'll keep them quiet now until more.
One of the important clues here is that McDonough was hired initially as Director of Strategic Communication. Now, very few people have ever heard the term strategic communication, but it's a holistic approach to achieving a policy goal in another nation or in your own nation. Okay, it means communicating a concept, a process, or data that satisfies a long-term strategic goal. Okay. And I have this in the article. It would make your listeners' eyes glaze over if I read this. But, you know, strategic communication could also be used for political warfare. And the whole point is to use the synchronization of images, actions, and words to achieve a desired effect. Now, that's important when you're trying to keep Iran from developing a bomb and things like that. But it's obvious that the Obama presidency is so politicized that they don't know where the Iranians leave off and the American people begin. They've been using this tactic from the very beginning, and that's where Fast and Furious came from. They wanted gun control. They realized that the political problems were too great to just go and try to grab it like the Clintons did. And so they came up with, hey, let's stack up a bunch of bodies in Mexico and blame American gun owners for it.
Mike, we're going to take a break in just a second. Here it comes right now. In 5 seconds or less, what was the ultimate strategic goal when we come back here on the Armed American Radio Network? We'll ask Mike what he thinks the ultimate policy goal of Fast and Furious was. We'll be right back. Welcome back indeed, Washington, D.C. Those of you in the bowels of the White House that are listening on WWRC in the District of Columbia, are you paying careful attention? We're on to you.
I think they are.
We have been for quite some time. And, of course, we know that there is someone, there is a staffer, listening to Armed American Radio in the White House. There has to be. I'm going to introduce this segment with a question directly for Mike Vanderbo. First of all, Mike, thank you very much for being here and you're adding the dynamic that you are with our regular segments with David Kodria. It is a thrill to have you here. Let's assume, Mike, as I do, that Fast and Furious is simply the means to an end here, okay? What is the end? In other words, if they were not outed here, if they were not busted by the fine work that you and David and many others have done, at what point would the administration have declared mission accomplished here with Fast and Furious?
Well,
had it not been for whistleblowers like John Dodson, you know, remember, you know, David and I are just vessels that carry this precious water, okay? Without the whistleblowers, these guys would still be getting away with it,
mm-hmm.
okay? We'd be fighting a defensive battle with, you know, spineless GOP people trying to defend against a demand that we have a new assault weapons ban, that we have more onerous gun control, simply because, you know, greedy American gun owners or gun dealers are selling guns to the cartel. All right? Without the whistleblowers, who knows, you know, how bad the present legislative picture would look. All right? That's the thing. Everybody talks about this as a botched operation, okay? The only way that you could reasonably say it was botched was because its cover was blown and they got caught. Okay.
They got caught.
But it intended to do exactly and precisely what they almost accomplished. You know, they came close. They really did. And, you know, I thank God every day for guys like John Dodson, you know, because you know, I hesitate to think where we would be otherwise.
Well, the intestinal fortitude these guys have shown is just remarkable. So you believe then, make sure I get this straight because I'm going somewhere with this, that you believe that the end result here for this operation, had they not been caught, would have been to place more restrictions and gun control on us.
Certainly.
Okay. I asked at the opening of hour one with my little brief monologue, what do immigration and guns have in common? On the surface, man, not a whole lot, until you dig in to what Obama just did with his immigration. And yet again, we see a president who is willing to do an end run around the Constitution. A second Obama term, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this, this will cement into your head the importance of ousting this president in November. When it comes to your firearms freedoms, a second Obama term is the biggest threat you face, period. And he has proven his willingness to skirt Congress and the legislative body and our legislative procedures here in this country, as he just did with his political ploy on illegal immigrants. David, you want to jump in?
I think that is a perfect analogy to bring into it. And when you recall that Andrew Johnson, my God, they impeached him for trying to replace the Secretary of War. Okay, that was considered an impeachable offense and a high crime and a misdemeanor. And here this guy is trying to dictate from the Oval Office. And we've seen Holder float the trial balloon of a quote-unquote assault weapons ban. We've seen along the southwest border the states that have the long gun reporting requirement that was implemented as a result of this. And here's the most important point, Mark, and it's one that we've brought up time and again on Armed American Radio. If there are more people listening in tonight, you may be hearing this for the first time. The media, the Obama propaganda machine, the authorized journalists, the real journalists, as opposed to just the bloggers like Mike and myself, they're covering and they're saying this is all tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. And, of course, Mark, you know that foil can be a precious substance that we use while grilling while armed. We don't waste it on making hats for ourselves. And this is not a Republican plot. This is not a partisan witch hunt. This is not the NRA is inventing this. This came, and Mike will tell you, early on, I think we reported January 5th, 2011, if I'm not mistaken, the term using this to pad statistics came not from the Republicans, not from the NRA, not from anybody wearing foil. It came from one of our insider sources. And so to say that this is just wacko conspiracy theory, then right back at you guys who are saying this, then what you're saying is the whistleblowers are liars. Let's be honest. That's what you're saying.
All right. Tinfoil hat here. Tinfoil hat. The Attorney General of the United States of America has been called no less than 8 times. Probably 9, I believe now. Am I losing count?
In front of congressional hearings? Yeah, I quit counting. Something like that. Yeah.
Something 8 or 9 times? Yeah, tinfoil hat. Mike, what do you want to leave us with here today?
Well, I think if we're going to get a successful resolution to this thing, and that is, you know, justice for all of the victims of the Gunwalker conspiracy, and that's more than Fast and Furious, we're going to have to spread it out to the other agencies that had knowledge or operational input into the various gunwalking things that happened in a number of states. And that means going after the National Security Agency. It means going after Hillary Clinton and the State Department. But until, and this is something that your listeners must understand, only they can influence this. You know, I'm not a member of the GOP, all right? I'm proud to say I've been on the enemy's list of the past three White Houses. And
congratulations.
You know, the thing to remember is these people, that is the GOP, will sell us out in a heartbeat if they see a political advantage or a political danger.
Oh, they absolutely will. We've had the discussion with Boehner. Yes.
They have to have their feet held to the fire every day. Beat up on your congressman about this every day, every week. Make yourself a pest. Make sure your friends make themselves pests. All right? We have to, we are at, and I have this, you know, from people who have been listening to people on the committee. And that is that we are at a critical juncture here. This next few days or weeks is going to decide whether or not we're sold or whether or not we're going to see things progress to the point where we can say, hey, yeah, we got justice for Brian Terry. But you can't trust anybody to give that to you. You've got to demand it. You've got to be a citizen.
I'm going to leave it with that right there. And thank you, Mike Vanderbilt, for being here on this hour of Armed American Radio. Incredible work. We will continue to have you on the program and continue to follow you. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Vanderbilt, Sipsey Street Irregulars. David Kodria, please hold the phone. Don't go away. I don't know what else to tell you other than what you heard. But we'll have more discussion about this topic and this discussion when we come back in the next hour. I didn't have enough time to give you the information on the AR-15. We'll do that in the next hour. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Armed American Radio Network. You'll only hear that here, as you just did. Remember, carry on, carry often, and carry everywhere. No self-respecting caveman ever leaves his cave without his club. More to come here on the Armed American Radio Network right after this.